the judiciary. I appreciate that you have made that an important point that you talk about. And I wanted to start by asking about the federal district courts, because as you know, most cases don't get all the way to the Supreme Court. So my first question is, I don't know if you're familiar, the Judicial Conference, which is the policymaking body for the federal court system, they have been recommending that Congress create new judgeships. So they would like to see 5 new Court of Appeals judgeships and 65 new district court judge positions around the country. And I was wondering if that would be something you would support.
I don't have a considered view on that, but I certainly think it's the right time to be asking these questions. You know, we've gotten locked into certain structures and certain numbers, so much so that I think we've come to assume that they're immutable. This is true of everything from the size of the U.S. House of Representatives to the makeup of the current U.S. Supreme Court, and it follows that there are other areas across our federal judiciary that deserve a look. So, I don't know that I'm ready to weigh in on what I think the optimal number would be. But we do know that there's a lot of evidence that the system's ready for a tune-up. And while the Supreme Court's getting the most attention, it's certainly not the only place in the judiciary that's probably fallen out of step with the time.
One thing that we saw when under President Obama was that he tried to work with Orrin Hatch and some of the other key Republicans to try to nominate judges who were vaguely acceptable to them. And I know, of course, we don't know, but let's assume for the right now that the Republicans still control the Senate. Is that something, do you see the president's role as to try, that they should try to work with the Republicans to try to get more nominees through, or just try to nominate, you know, the most progressive qualified judges and then let the chips fall?
You know, working with Republicans only works if you can do it in good faith. And I think what we learned from, certainly things like Mitch McConnell saying that they would push through nominees in 2020, when just 2 years ago they made it a matter of principle, or 3 years ago they made it a matter of principle that you can't have a nomination get confirmed during an election year. Makes it clear that at this point they're not even pretending to be there in good faith. And unless that fundamental dynamic changes among Senate Republicans, it's going to be very difficult to approach them in the spirit of compromise and fair play and expect anything other than to be taken advantage of.
If the Democrats controlled the Senate, would you be in favor of reinstating the filibuster for either Supreme Court or any judicial appointments, or are you in favor of just going with the new normal, which is that you only need 51 votes to confirm a judge?
I think the horse is out of the barn on that, and if anything, the real action is going to move toward the question of whether the filibuster canon should be preserved at all. What we have to ask ourselves, I think, zooming out a little bit, is when we're considering any of these norms, especially things like Senate rules that are sometimes so locked in that we think of them as laws, but they're not. When are the norms actually doing good, and when are we doing things just because we've always done it that way? And we really should be oriented more towards the future and just saying, okay, what's a good normal that we want to work toward versus negotiating between the president.
That kind of leads into my next question, which related to the old system, or the old normal, which was that the president typically worked with the home state senators. And often, so for instance, if there was a vacancy in Iowa when Tom Harkin was in the Senate, Tom Harkin would submit the names and the Democratic president would choose from among those names. Is that something, do you feel that the president should be constrained by people who are recommended by home state senators?
I think there is something appealing about that custom, because it shows regard for the relationship that a senator has with their region. But I think, as with every other norm, in a season when norms are being revisited, it should be held up to a certain amount of scrutiny. And I think the real question is that in the public interest? So I guess I would view it in much the same way I do my own more specific and local appointment powers back home, which is, you know, if there are many qualified people, then it makes sense as part of your sorting process to empower others to help identify or support or even filter some of your choices. But only if you're confident that won't ever run counter to your duty to appoint somebody who will be very well suited to the role.
Mm-hmm. And some people have argued that judicial appointments, that the pool that they're drawing from has become more and more narrow. So it's just a pool of people who are already judges or already district court judges, and that it, in past decades, presidents were more willing to cast a wider net to look for people who could bring a different kind of experience to the court. And I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's another example of something we should revisit. Look, I'm not sure there's a shortage of talent on the bench, but if the existing bench has become skewed, especially because of the politics of the last couple decades around judicial appointments, then that could make it a good moment to pull in some less customary sources, still making sure that people are qualified. But you know, the sad truth is, we're there are people outside of the proverbial system who are available to be considered, who are quite a bit more qualified than some of the people we're seeing appointed by this administration.
Mm-hmm. In not just in federal courts, but also in state courts, we see that a large number of judges are former prosecutors, and a much smaller number of judges are former defense attorneys or public defenders. Is that an imbalance that you think needs to be corrected? Or do you have a view on that?
No, I'd certainly be attracted to establishing more of a balance. That being said, I would also think about the problem a little bit upstream of that, which is that I think people who are motivated to make sure that there is justice for defendants who are early in their careers will be drawn toward roles like being public defenders. I think actually people like that should be among those who consider careers as prosecutors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so often if you look at things like the History of the Innocence Project, a lot depends on whether you have a fair-minded DA.
Mm-hmm.
And so while it might seem more natural or more kind of tribally considered for a progressive-minded person involved in the justice system or in law to be always on the, you know, in the kind of defendant side of the courtroom, I think having somebody who is justice-minded, having people who are forward-leaning, thinking about things like restorative justice, having them go into the prosecutorial side would probably do a lot of good, too.
Mm-hmm. I want to move to the Supreme Court, and I wanted to ask, before asking about this 15-judge idea, have you seen, there's a term limits proposal that a group called Fix the Court has proposed that would be basically 18-year terms for U.S. Supreme Court appointees going forward, and each president getting two nominations during their term in the first and third years of the term. Have you seen that proposal at all?
Yeah. I think it solves some problems and creates others.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the good news, of course, is that it creates a regular rhythm. It probably evens out some of the political considerations. It keeps you from having an appointment. It basically deals with sort of unfairness associated with appointments of people at different ages, and it spares you the sometimes unseemly spectacle of people seeming to want to defer their departure from the bench or their departure from this life based on the political calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And so for all those reasons, I understand why it's attractive. It does, though, create a new set of problems, one of which is the prospect of appointees entertaining the thought of a career after their time on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to do it, you would want to do it, I think, with a norm or even a rule that precludes that sort of thing, that kind of establishes what is appropriate for someone to do in retirement as a former Supreme Court member. By the way, you know, we can find some interesting historical precedent here. There's a time when it's actually customary for retire almost as a matter of course. There's a whole interesting little discussed historical side note to how the whole FDR quarterbacking scheme evolved, which had to do with it was really triggered by a kind of crisis created when they inadvertently cut pensions for former justices, and it changed their incentives and motivated them to stay on the bench longer than they used to, which was part of what led to it. It wasn't just FDR being mad, he wasn't getting his way on the court. Anyway, all of that is to say, you know, I think that any of a range of options should be entertained, for as long as we just agree on the basic purposes, which is reduce the political stakes, increase the number of justices who think for themselves, and do away with some of the more grotesque elements of the current appointment process.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certainly many ways to do that. I just hope we don't overestimate how much benefit would come from the term limit concept. Even though I'm not hostile to it, there's some reasons I'm not as enthusiastic about it too.
And finally, I want to ask you a little bit about this 15-member court plan, because one thing we saw during the Kavanaugh confirmation, and we've seen it when with other hardcore ideologue judges have been up, is you get these Democrats who are law partners or law school buddies who write letters and or write op-ed pieces saying how great this person is and he's so smart. And so I'm just wondering, if we had this, you know, five Republican-aligned and Democratic-aligned judges choosing the final five, wouldn't we just get a club of their law school friends or their former law partners?
Well, it depends how you structure it, right? So it could be that there's kind of two layers to it, and one is that people are still nominated by a president, but then they can only be approved by the consensus of the 10.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be one way to diminish the vulnerability to that objection. Although, you know, the reality is that the world of judicial appointments is pretty clubby to begin with. You know, I think it's even the case that to the extent that there is a sense of regard that gets across the aisle, even if it's cultivated in smaller circles like the appellate bench or legal academia or the private sector, that it still could do some good relative to the world we're in now, which is so tribal.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there is something to be said for the fact that you know, not in an unfair or exclusionary way, but the fact that you can have people who have relationships across the aisle. The loss of that, I think, has certainly worsened our political life. And to the extent that people can learn through relationships, you know, again, hopefully they're formed in an inclusive setting, but that people can learn from relationships that are outside of the political context to view one another as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Might be helpful in order to stop the courts from going the way of the Congress.
Another issue with that proposal, since right now conservatives dominate most of the courts of appeals around the country, is that wouldn't there be an incentive for the conservative justices just not to approve, not to agree to the five justices, and then have the Supreme Court not hear any cases that term, and potentially just leave all the lower court judgments, most of which would be favorable to the conservative policy goals, in place?
Yeah, no, it's a valid objection, especially if you go by the concept that's in the article that's been put forward, where you know, the way you kind of enforce the need for there to be that consensus is that you can't have a quorum without it, and then can't have a quorum, the cases can't be heard, the prior decision stands. Of course, that's something that one would hope is a temporary effect as the bench comes into a little more balance over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is one of the reasons why the step that I would take as president is not to immediately launch this reform, but to establish a commission that can hear how this, as well as the term limit concept, as well as others that may not have been framed up yet, either individually or in combination, could do some good.
Mm-hmm.
Hear all of these objections, you know, reach a considered opinion, hopefully develop some kind of consensus, or at least a strong point of view with some political backing to it, and then.
Hey, Laura, I think we're gonna have to run.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay, bye. Good luck.